Hello, Peter. So I want to give a little bit of context in this recording about the parts that are and are not being honored, as well as what I think would be, you know, a good way to respond to that. So in this exchange, you know, having repeatedly dropped the ball in following up and holding, and asking me when's good for me, you're saying, well, six is better for you. Why not lead with that? And in requiring, see, your forgetfulness, Peter, requires repetition. So it's, you're transferring the load, but this is in a healing context where you're in the emotional mental healing business. And for you to be medicinal, you have to have a sense of context of what's the pattern that you're remedying, one, and two, how you can behave to balance that pattern. Because if you want to be a dominant, you know, impatient, intolerant, arrogant male in response to a chauvinistic abuse pattern, you can't be medicinal. You've got to have a sense of the underlying imbalance and the underlying message before you can understand if you can be medicinal or not, and direct the issue. So part of the issue is, you know, we begin our work and there's no intake form about this broader context. Now in physical medicine, this would be absurd to go in without knowing allergies, reactivity, et cetera, because we all have mental, emotional allergies and reactivities, just like we have physical allergies and reactivities. And you as a practitioner decide if you want to know about that or not, which is an expression of honor or, you know, dishonor. Like, let's just see what happens. In this exchange with you right here, so Monday works better for you after asking what's, you know, good for me. And I've outlined where you've dropped the ball because you forgot. And rather than assume that you forgot, you assumed that I was writing to the wrong person. Well, you've got a lot of assumptions that this has nothing to do with you. Why do you have those assumptions without taking the time to understand what's going on and without having an outtake form at the end of the session to understand where you were nurturing, where you were not nurturing? You don't ask, you don't want to know. If you don't ask, you don't see. If you don't see, you can't respect, you can't honor what's invisible to you. So, you know, there's underlying systemic issues. And then the question is, why bother to reach out to you if you're this blatant in your disowning and disinterest of your impact on the patient? Why bother? Because I care about your patients. I also care about the message around a very feminine part of me that has almost never been honored in this culture, and that is probably one of the deepest underlying wounds around the abuse issues we worked, is a very feminine, a very responsive, a very emotional, a very young part. Now, you've got a German edge of, on the one hand, it's very grounded and healthy in that sense. It's solid. On the other hand, it's very unresponsive and, you know, take your email like here. I've listed 8 areas where you've dropped the ball for me. Your response is, 6 p.m. is better for you. Where's the apology? Where's the ownership? You see, if you're in the mental-emotional healing business, Peter, it's not about you. The question is, are you willing to be of service? That's the first question. Is that the intent to be of service? Second question, what is of service for which you need a sense? You need a sense of a diagnosis, a sense of what's off and imbalance, and you need to decide, are you able and willing to balance that out? Because if someone's leaning hard to the right, and your attitude is, well, I'm just a right-leaning person and take it or leave it, that's not responsible from a professional role, because your ethics demand, the ethics of your business, the ethics of healing in general demand that you have a positive impact in response to people taking time, trust, vulnerability, and money to hire you. If you do not have a positive impact after someone exposes all of that to you, you're doing harm and it's unethical. And your job as the professional is to have a sense of where those lines are. You know, personally, I'm appalled by a lot of the ethical behavior in this sector, because it wouldn't be tolerated at Best Buy. It wouldn't be tolerated at Whole Foods. You don't get to sell rotten food for someone and then be told about it and not get a refund, etc. But without outtake, without attunement, without checking, there isn't even a clear sense in most sectors of this field of what is and is not rotten. Now, I'm repeating myself because you forgot and, you know, have forgotten multiple times in this thing. One of the things that I question and challenge about your counsel to me. So you learned in witnessing and in talking about, you know, you commented about they excluded you, they disowned you, da-da-da. You learned about severe sexual therapeutic negligence by a school, by a group of therapists living nearby you, the Human Awareness Institute. You learned about that through me. And your advice was to move on, was to just, you know, go do something more productive. Here's the problem with that, which is, first of all, an advice I've not been able to do physiologically. I haven't been able to sleep. I haven't been able to, you know, resolve this. I've been in literal hell over the last 4 years. And so since I haven't been able to move through the trauma, I've decided to make this into a learning and growing opportunity that benefits the sexual abuse survivor archetype in this country. And so I've made over 1,000 hours of video. I've then studied more than 1,000 hours in research to understand what's going on in this terrain. Because I've done, you know, a ton of work in these fields and notice a lot of blind spots in retrospect. And it's not just with you, but you're one piece in this. Now, my question to you is, you're being paid to fix another therapist's mess. Where's the prevention in your ethic. Because if you understand more than most the profound ethics and responsibility of someone trying to do mental and emotional healing in a culture as dissociative, traumatized, confused, crazy making, and all that as ours, then it begins by not having fucked up therapists. You can't have therapists with blind spots willfully blocking those blind spots. So here's where you're falling into Peter Sandhill's pattern again. Because he didn't want to listen to any of the things that were off about his behavior either. He didn't want to listen to them before the session. He didn't want to listen to them while I was high on psychedelics. He didn't want to listen to them while he was sexually abusing me. And he certainly didn't want to listen to them afterwards. Then the Human Awareness Institute didn't want to listen to them. Now, your advice is to walk away. And something interesting came up in the process of creating a website that the Human Awareness Institute sued me to try and shut down, because it was a non-commercial, ethical-based website designed to highlight sexual abuse risks in the community. They lost the lawsuit. But a Human Awareness Institute is trying to shut down human awareness about their sexual abuses. And it bothers me that the first time you're prioritizing this is when I mention a Yelp review. Because that's not an honoring message. Now, that's when the high organization started paying attention. When they understood that they'd probably be taken to court, that their emails and all of this would be on the web for people to understand how fucked up they are as therapists. Now, people would not understand that if I took your advice and walked away. And a team member who'd worked with them 10 years ago ended up contacting me because of the website, also advising me to walk away, saying, basically, Dane, I recommend you just move on like me. But she's still dealing with PTSD and doing therapy 10 years later. And she said nothing. Maybe she talked to her therapist like you, who told her to move on. But I don't think it's helping particularly if 10 years later she's still in therapy with PTSD, one, and two, nobody knows about it because she's taking advice from another therapist to not talk about it. Now, here's the real problem. If she hadn't been advised to stay silent and hadn't just quietly gone away, I knew this woman 10 years ago, and I would have known, she would have announced to the community, as I have, that I've been sexually abused by a high facilitator, and I would have gotten that message and would have been able to protect myself. So the problem with your ethics here, Peter, is that they lead to an inevitable continual stream of victims. High has done work with 40,000 people over the last four decades. They lead to an inevitable stream of silent victims, apparently most of which are advised or feel too embarrassed to speak up about it. How is that good advice? You're a mental, emotional health practitioner. How is secrecy and dissociation helping the dynamic? Because the data says that's how it perpetuates. And you took money to give that advice. There's another big issue that I have with some of this. Now, I did work with you with deities to get your ego out of the picture a lot of the time, because I don't feel safe with human beings who behave like you do. It's too fucking painful to be in this amount of dissociation, grief, needing help. Now, you don't know the whole history, and that's to be expected since you haven't asked or done an intake form. But this is incredibly difficult terrain for me, and that's not personal. It's incredibly difficult terrain for anyone in this arena. Now, the other piece that I brought up, which you've forgotten or didn't read in the email, is the work we did around Honeylin. A woman who I described was repeatedly dropping the ball, reenacting trauma, da 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 da. And you encouraged that relationship. You encouraged that relationship based on who she was and encouraged the strategy that it seemed like, you know, paying the family some money would get the family support so that, you know, our relationship could take off. So based on, you know, the work that we did on that, I re-engaged. Now that very rarely, if ever, works for me. I think 95% of the time, if I'm seeing clear symptoms, it's not working. It just doesn't work. But I was in love with her. I definitely wanted it to work out. And so I re-engaged. I started giving the family money. I gave her another chance. Things got worse. I ended up being out several thousand dollars in, you know, paying fees and stuff to her mother, being confused, and ending up, you know, exactly where the pattern began, which was, you know, at key moments, she would never prioritize the relationship, you know, and frankly wasn't in love. So that didn't work out. And that's not something I would have tried again without our influence, or, you know, the influence of the session. And this also fits in with, you know, another pattern. Because if you do a lot of work, I've done over 1,000 hours of this kind of work with different practitioners, including Maniko, who kind of was the reason that I did work with you, was I met Maniko. There. And, you know, Maniko certainly has a high opinion of herself and, the people she recommends. I worked with another practitioner, etc. And so, you know, that's why I chose you was Maniko. And, you know, shortly after the thing blew up with Honeylin, I met my now wife, who I'm very happily married to. And that energy worker, psychic therapist, etc., recommended that I not connect with my wife. Before that, another great psychic, you know, the same person who sexually abused, highly recommended that I marry one of the most inappropriate Thai people that I've met. So you're just in a pattern of 3 for 3 dismal failure where under the influence of a dysfunctional attached relationship with Peter Sandhill, escalated romantically under the influence of MDMA and psychedelics at $175 an hour, leading to heartbreak and all of that. But under that influence, he was strongly recommending, despite all of the evidence, that I marry this Thai girl who's one of the most inappropriate Thai girls I've ever met. And I was in a dependent relationship. I'm not sure how much you study age regression. I don't know your psychology training here. But you need to know this background because you're dealing in that field. Well, that was a $60,000 disaster error that led to intense re-traumatization and damage to both people. Would never have happened without his repeated comments about, you know, this is the best future I see for you, all this stuff, just, you know, and just went on. Then we had you coming along with Hani Lin and encouraging that despite it, you know, going painful and being unlikely from my evidence to improve. But it's so important when in trauma to have a secure, loving relationship. And I was in love with Hani Lin, so I gave it another shot, spent, you know, another $30,000 in time off work and all of that. Paid the families, you know, hired a marriage broker and stuff. Got her a visa to the U.S. You know, expensive stuff, only to find the exact same pattern. So Peter was wrong. You were wrong. And then another shaman I've worked with, when I talk with him about my wife, thinks it's a terrible relationship for me and I shouldn't see her. Well, he's full of shit as well. I couldn't be more happy with my wife 2 years later. And, you know, I'm pissed off at this level of bullshitty advice from people taking money to give advice that doesn't work. You know, I think it takes a certain amount of discipline and caveat and humility. Because, you know, absolutely none of you have any interest in hearing that it didn't work out. I don't know, do you blame your patients when your advice doesn't get wrong? Who do you think is responsible for things that don't work out? Do you gather data to know, are you off 50% of the time and it's just a crapshoot? Are you off 80% of the time? Are you off 30% of the time? Do you gather that data when you give advice like this to get a sense of if someone takes your influence over their own normal judgment protocol and makes a different decision than they would normally make because of you, how often does that pan out in a good way? Because if that's in negative terrain or even 50-50 terrain, I think that's, you know, not ethical to be involved with. So I think this is a learning opportunity for you if you want to serve your patients, and I'm happy to spend time with it. And I'd like you to respect the process. And I think the most kind and ethical thing to do to you and your future patients is to put all of the data online afterwards. And if it resolves well, then clients can say, well, here's someone that knows how to resolve this terrain. If it doesn't, then here's someone who doesn't know how to resolve this terrain. Because I am in no way negating the excellent work in other areas. I was able to connect with deities through our work, thank heavens. And I felt immense calm and peace whenever I was doing that. There's another piece that I want you to know that is a wound around this, and that is that I've never been in more pain and trauma in my life than I have around this whole thing at the, you know, the time I met you, etc. It's very vulnerable to go out to hire another therapist to fix the first therapist. It's also, you know, absurd. And one of the reasons that therapist is likely to be end up in court, you know, with the way things are going, is because of the blame-shame pattern that he engaged with when I started to bring up the issues. And then the blame shame game and dissociation game of the Human Awareness Institute. Now, the bottom line is I am helping sexual abuse survivors at the Human Awareness Institute through the website, through the work, and I will be continuing to either shut that community down or see that it embodies best practices, period. And I think you as a therapist are ethically bound to play a role in that. That when a peer of yours creates business for you through their abuse of a client, you know, first of all, to be humble and aware that it's not right, it's not ethical, it's not healthy for the client to be ending to pay for the therapist's mess to be cleaned up. Secondly, to be humble to the fact that you're in a field that regularly spews out this kind of shit and doesn't tend to gather data about exactly how much and in what areas. But an area that hurts me is the dissociative response, like, this is our time. See, because you're protected over there, Peter. You're getting paid. You're not going into your stuff. You're not being influenced by the sessions. I am. And that means that if you fuck up, it hurts me. And particularly if you tune out and go through your defense pattern as you've been, you know, stalling, denying, and not asking, you don't have to take any of that on. Well, I think that's an imbalance. It hurts me to talk about things that produce this amount of pain and have no empathic response. It hurts a deeply feminine part of me that has been hurt most of my life from the same thing. Healthy human beings cry when they see someone in this kind of grief and pain. But your face doesn't change. Your words don't change. Your tone doesn't change. You're just the implacable Peter. That's a wound because it's continuing the message, your feelings don't matter, which is the exact message that a man in this culture is going to be wounded by 10,000 times before they walk into your door. Of course they matter. And if you're open, I'd like to work out a protocol with you that I believe would deliver 30% better results with your clients. One. Two, put you in line closer with, because of that, with the ethics of a healing practitioner. Thirdly, lead to more retentive business. This is what corroded our relationship for me. Because you don't strike me as a safe person to bring up this shit with. And it's too painful to have yet another person play defense and denial just because you can. And you've easily, you know, with the discounting, forgetting, delaying, and then forgetting again, you've easily communicated just how unimportant this is to you. But this is your business, Peter. This isn't my business. And we're talking about your client's future well-being. I don't feel safe to work with you right now, so I'm not working with you. That doesn't mean hundreds of other clients won't go into this and find some area on their map with you of this similar terrain that maybe they can't communicate. Or maybe they could, but they see what I see that you don't want to know. And so you don't listen. So I'm happy to work with you as with a third party if you feel triggered and upset about this. I think you mentioned your wife is good at this, but if it's too personal, I'm happy to work with I mean, a good therapist, I think, needs a peer buddy review if it's dealing with their own stuff. That shouldn't be carried by your client or past client. I'm happy to do that. I'm happy to work out a protocol. And I'm happy to map it all out and use that as a guideline for how other therapists should be working with their clients, because there is huge room for improvement in this domain. And I think your clients are worth it. I think I'm worth it. And if you do, you're worth it too. To learn how to do this better. And because I don't like the idea of abuse survivors continually paying other people to abuse them and have to deal with that in an endless loop, I'm donating this for free, and I'm doing a nonprofit that I've formed to help work with these issues. So this is the context that I invite you to show up with at 6 p.m. on Monday, and to engage with in a recorded platform with a goal, which should be the one and only goal at the end, how to protect and honor the vulnerability and safety of your clients going forward better. I think there's an easy way to get a 30% benefit. And make this part of a learning protocol that other therapists can benefit from as well.